Hi, Richie.
Hi, Sin.
Hi, everyone. Before we start, since this is a very loaded podcast because Odin is a controversial figure, we're going to do a meditation exercise. What's so funny?
Odin is a controversial figure.
He is. Okay, Richie, close your eyes.
All right. What? I had the cat.
Close your eyes, Richie.
Me. All right. Okay.
Okay, are they closed?
Yes.
Imagine you're on a beach and you hear the waves and they're hitting your feet. It's very, very sunny. And somebody's there with us.
What did I just walk into exactly?
I thought this might happen because Sin was like, we have to record at 9:30 a.m. EST.
Hi, Redgrave!
Hello, hi. Yes, I just found out.
Hi.
I found out about a week ago that this was going to be a surprise for Rich.
Yeah, yeah.
But I figured, you know, it's not my podcast, so I'm not the one making decisions, I guess, but
Richie loves surprises. Rich, aren't you happy right now?
I thought this was going to happen because it was happening in the morning.
Right, and I guess that makes sense.
So I figured either Redgrave or Aegon, yeah.
It's funny because when I told Redgrave about it, I was like, we're going to surprise Richie and you're going to show up. He was like, you know what? I would like to know if somebody is showing up to a podcast so I can be prepared. And I was like, no, Richie loves surprises. It's cool. So he was like concerned for you, Richie, which is really nice.
Well,
thank you.
You know, it's like I said, it's not my podcast, so I'll just defer to how the two of you work.
Okay. So as I was saying, Redgrave, before we start, since this is a very loaded podcast because Odin is a controversial figure.
He is.
We're going to do a meditation exercise.
I'm sorry?
I thought the meditation exercise was just you getting me to close my eyes so you could add Redgrave to the call.
Oh my god, it's a meditation exercise. Why does Rich have to question me? Okay, everyone, close your eyes.
All right.
Do I actually have to close my eyes?
Yes, we're doing this for real. It's a meditation exercise. You ready?
Okay. Okay.
Okay. Everyone, close your eyes. Mm-hmm. Imagine you're on a beach. And you hear the waves. And you hear the sand. Oh my god, who's here with us?
Oh god, oh god.
Oh wow, there's a surprise for me here too.
Is that Aegon?
Wow.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God. Everybody got surprised.
What's going on, friends?
Wow. Look at that.
Oh, my God. Hello.
Hi. How you been?
Not too bad. Well, going crazy in dissertation editing land.
Can I open my eyes now, Sin?
Oh, sorry. That's right. You may open your eyes now.
Okay, great. Thank you.
Oh, my God. Well, because I was just thinking, looking through all this stuff, like, oh, it's too bad Redgrave's not going to be there because it'd give him lots of shout-outs from, as I was just looking over some of my tutorial slides for the class I was teaching last year, because we talk all about Minamata disease in Ontario. And, yep. And,
oh, wow. Do you really?
Like, owing to you, of course, my awareness of that going way back to that video you did on it, on was it on Odin specifically?
It was, yes, it was, and it was on Odin and on Mercury in general.
Yeah. Good times! Wow, so the whole gang's back together.
Yay!
Yeah,
yeah. Well, actually, Redgrave inspired me to invite you because what had happened is that I was like, Redgrave, let's surprise Richie with your presence. And Redgrave was like, I don't know. I wouldn't want that to be done to me. And I was like, I got this.
Well played.
Thank you. But my boyfriend was like, Redgrave specifically told you not to do that. It's okay. It's a good surprise.
I like how your boyfriend is like your conscience at the same time.
Yes, exactly. Is your boyfriend a real person, or is it just that voice in your head that tells you not to do the things that you're doing? Well, you
know how I know he's a real person? Because she's still alive, based on that Halloween story that she posted.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
I missed this. What happened?
Well, Sin was she said, oh, my boyfriend's going away. I'm a little worried about my safety. And I thought it was going to be like, oh, I'm worried about potential, like, home invasions or something. But no, it's that if she doesn't have adult supervision, she just, like, sets fire to things and cuts herself and slips over all the time.
Oh, my God. I played that for my fiance yesterday, and she found it pretty funny, actually.
So, before we start, since this is a very loaded podcast, because Eden is a controversial figure, we're going to do a meditation exercise.
Oh, God.
I'd like everyone
to close their eyes. Who else is going to show up?
I'm not closing my eyes.
Now that everybody's here.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Richie.
Hi, Sin.
Hi, everyone.
Hello.
Hello.
Richie, tell us what we're doing here today.
We're talking about Erden with Aegon and Redgrave.
Actually, no.
No?
No. We're here to do a critique of the Pale Blood Hunt.
Oh, God.
Uh-oh. Really?
It's a joke, Richie.
I don't know what's real anymore.
Have you read it? Because I find often that I'll have conversations with people who haven't read it.
No, I read it. Oh my God, Redgrave, I read it before it was cool. I printed it out. I highlighted it. I'm legit.
Okay.
I was up to Rick back when he was in, like, single digits.
So was I.
Okay, so we're back in 2015, basically.
Yep.
Yeah.
Don't do this to me, please.
Okay. No, for real, for real.
Right.
Richie, why are we here today?
I don't know anymore.
To talk about the Odin Rive and the Formless Odin runes.
That's right, yes. And this has a purpose, because Richie and I do Runes of Bloodborne. And oh my God, Richie, stop! Take this seriously! And when it was time to get to Odin, I was like, oh my God, we have Odin experts. We can, like, have them on. It's going to be super cool.
So is this Runes of Bloodborne now?
It was Runes of Bloodborne all the time, but then I asked people to ask questions, and they asked a lot of questions about Odin specifically.
All right.
Who would have thought that people would ask questions about Odin?
Yeah.
Usually Runes of Bloodborne is just Sin interrogating me about, like, every possible version of Clear Deep Sea and what it's supposed to represent.
So you didn't think that we were going to have an actual legit discussion about any of this at any point?
No, we haven't had a legitimate discussion for several months now.
I'm still questioning whether or not we're going to have a legit actual discussion.
And meanwhile, I'm here. I have like 8 tabs open with different information. I got a friggin' notepad here with a bunch of stuff scribbled on it. I'm here preparing for this like it's going to be some sort of legit podcast at 9 in the morning. On a Saturday.
See, I prepared the last 2 times I was on this podcast, and my preparation was not particularly helpful. So I just figured this time I would come ready to discuss.
Richie.
Yeah.
We're friends, right?
Go on.
Are you?
I may have to ask a favor later in the podcast, but because you value our friendship, it's going to be okay. Let's start this. Does everybody have Odin questions version 2?
Yep.
Yeah.
Excellent.
I do, yes.
So, the first questions are about Odin. And these are, mm-hmm, like, general questions. So.
All right.
Can you tell us, who is Odin?
Well, Odin or Odin or Odin or however you choose to pronounce it. I believe the only one who pronounces it out loud in game is Garmin.
Garmin and the Chapel Dweller.
Eileen says it as well.
Thanks for coming here to this Odin Chapel.
Oh, that's right. Yes, that's right. And so Odin is, and we typically give him a male pronoun just because of his role as sort of impregnating women, but giving him a male pronoun isn't entirely accurate. It's just more useful, because it's not really clear if he has gender in the way that we conceive of gender, but he is basically the formless great one that is pretty much responsible for most of what's happening in Yharnam and in Bloodborne and in the history of Bloodborne. He's the one who is basically responsible for creating the children of which the Moon Presence wants to destroy, and sort of jumps the whole hunt process into being.
See, I find that really interesting because I seem to recall that Richard, his perspective on it, at least as it was communicated in that video, which I may or may not have watched the other day to refresh my memory about, was that there's not really a lot of evidence of Odin's influence beyond the immediate area around which the Odin Chapel is located.
That's my take on it. Yeah, I don't think Odin is. I think Odin's importance to the story is sort of coincidental, I guess. Because we happened to send Ariana there.
Well, and so this is something I was thinking about the other day, because I had that same thought in my mind that, you know, like Redgrave, I wanted to believe that there was some larger significance. Not saying that Redgrave, that you wanted to believe that, but I wanted to believe that there was some larger significance to Odin. But as best as I can tell, there doesn't really seem to be much to it other than, yes, he impregnates Ariana, and then you get an additional cord of the eye. But all that really does, and it's not even really necessary, because it's one of four, right? And you need three to summon the Moon Presence.
Mm. Let me counter that by asking you, do you believe that Mergo is not the child of Odin? Because that is, I believe that is specifically depicted to be the case.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would have to incredibly disagree with the concept that Odin is localized in that way, if it is the case that Mergo is the child of Odin and Queen Yharnam.
Yeah.
So I guess we technically just sort of covered number two as well. What is Odin's role in the game?
Well, I think, like, to me, Odin's role in the game is that no one, like, the characters all seem to come into contact with Odin but don't actually know what Odin is.
Sure.
Until the very end of it, when he's the father of Ariana's child.
Hmm.
Because, like we said, Eileen and Garmin and the Chapel Dweller, they all talk about Odin and they say Odin, but it's always in reference to
the place as opposed to the being.
Either Odin Chapel or the Odin Graveyard. Yeah, they don't seem to be aware that Odin's actually a great one. But then it turns out all these characters have these Odin runes in their heads. So, like, he is sort of, he's this lurking presence in Cathedral Ward around that Odin area, and he's sort of like, kind of like reaching out and touching these people, but he hasn't actually like properly manifested to anyone yet. In the same way that like the city is called Yharnam, you don't find out till you get to the bottom of the dungeons that, oh, Yharnam is a Thumerian word. So I assume Odin is the same thing, that it's just this place, it's named after this great one, but everyone's forgotten about it, so they just know it is the Odin area.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, I think that's fair. And I think what should be pointed out is that Odin multiple times is referred to in different texts as existing only in voice, and the runes in people's heads are the voice of great ones. So it's more like when you if you're trying to find a physical manifestation of Odin, it is those runes in people's heads.
Hmm.
Mm.
Thank you. This is a question more for Redgrave.
Okay.
What is the connection between Odin, Blood, Quicksilver, and Mercury?
So the most clear and apparent connection between Odin and Mercury is the fact that all of his runes have to do with holding more Mercury or from gathering Mercury from enemies. Quicksilver just being another word for Mercury. The Quicksilver bullets you hold being sort of the central resource in Bloodborne other than blood. So I guess the second most central resource in Bloodborne. And so that's basically the most common evident connection between the two of them. And there's also multiple references to the oozing blood being the essence of the formless great one, Odin. And the way I interpret that is that the mercury in the blood is sort of the oozing blood that they're making reference to. Is someone eating?
For once, it's not me.
I think it's Richie.
No, I'm not.
Okay.
Somebody's doing something. Maybe drinking ice cubes.
Ice cubes.
Where was? Yes. Odin and there's a lot of, if you want to get into like really sort of speculative and digging stuff, there's a lot of connections between alchemy, and there's a lot of stuff in Bloodborne around alchemy and around Azoth and around different kinds of concepts that were being gone into, and you know, hermetic symbols, and you see the caduceus, which is the staff with the snakes wrapped around it, as being a symbol of Mercury. And then you find the pilgrims in the chalice dungeons who are carrying a pendant that has a caduceus on it. And so there's a lot of themes of Mercury and of Quicksilver, which are effectively the same thing, and their connections to Odin. And it's a very significant part of the kind of the underlying world building of Bloodborne and of what their society is, and that they all are using Mercury for different purposes as kind of a resource that gives them power. And the way I view it is that Odin and the Mercury that they people are using is kind of the essence of Odin.
Mm-hmm. So can we also talk about the meaning or the potential meanings of Writhe and Formless in the names of the runes?
Sure, yeah.
Because I'd be very curious to hear what the translation is, like what the original Japanese text is, in particular for Odin Writhe.
I don't have it offhand.
Writhe is, it's this onomatopoeia for like wiggling, like you'd use for like a worm or a slug for memory. The same.
Because I remember, I seem to recall you relating it to vermin, right?
It's the same. This is a long time ago. I think it's the same word that they use to describe the worm and the vermin wriggling in the blood. Yeah.
Okay. Because I did have an alternative, a potential alternative interpretation of that, as with for formless. But the latter, I'll get to that in a second. But could Writhe, I wondered, be a reference to the tremors, which are a symptom of Minamata disease? So to review for anyone who hasn't seen Redgrave's video on the subject, on Odin as being the essence of Quicksilver, essentially, that in, what was it, the 1950s in Chiso, Japan, the Chiso chemical...
They began dumping... Are you talking about the chemical company dumping mercury? Because that was pretty much directly after World War II, so it would have been late 1940s.
Oh, so they did it for a couple decades.
And they did it for a while until people started getting sick.
Yeah. And one of the... I had a list here somewhere of the various different symptoms, but if you watch... So, thanks to Redgrave and my sort of pre-existing interest in the subject, my students got to not only in their class watch a clip of me going through the fishing hamlet so that I could show them sort of the mercury poison monsters in the fishing hamlet, but also I made them watch a documentary about it, which include some pretty horrifying scenes, essentially, of...
It was a pretty terrible condition, yeah. And spasming and,
yeah.
and I remember looking, is one yeah. of the main symptoms. It was originally called the dancing cat disease because the symptoms first occurred in cats. And it's because from a distance, you would think that the cats were dancing. But as you got closer, you'd notice they were actually having very terrible writhing seizures.
Mm-hmm. So it's a neurological condition, right? Yeah, and so
that's my understanding. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, go ahead, Jason.
I was going to say I just remember like looking for footage to use in something and being like, I actually can't use this.
It's very graphic. It's
so disturbing. It's like disrespectful to actually just use that in like a Bloodborne video. So my students
didn't get the same courtesy, but
yeah.
You know, I think it's important in some instances to sort of, because this is something that also the reason why I was teaching about it is that, you know, I'm not teaching Japanese history or anything, but it's a course about the inequalities embedded in the healthcare system in Canada as with elsewhere. But we looked at the case actually of Minamata disease in Ontario, the Grassy Narrows First Nation, who share a river essentially with the Dryden paper or chemical company, and they dumped mercury in the river for decades. And the people at the Grassy Narrows First Nations are still trying to get official recognition for the disease. But in any case, the symptoms there are more or less the same. And so all of this is my very long-winded way of asking, is it possible that writhe in this rune title is a reference or you know, perhaps a double meaning that is also supposed to point to one of the symptoms of Minamata disease?
I think it's certainly possible. Mercury poisoning is definitely something that in Japan people are conscious and aware of, and is something that people in Japan grow up learning about because, you know, they are, I believe Japan is the most densely populated island nation in the world. I could be wrong about that, but it's something that they are very much aware of, and the symptoms of it are something they learn about. And so I guess it's entirely possible. I would have to, it's been a long time since I've looked at the Japanese script directly. So I would have to look at the words that are used in order to see if there's more evidence for that in the actual script. But I think that's definitely an interesting take on it.
Mm-hmm.
My take on it is just that the writhe is, because it comes in formless and writhe variations, and the writhe is meant to be Erden is sort of getting into your body and sort of like poking around and writhing around trying to conceive this child. And I guess we'll come into that later on when we talk about like where it's, I think it's very deliberate, the characters that you find formless and the characters that you find writhe in, because that seems to be lined up with who could and could not conceive.
Okay, so I guess the second part of my question then is with respect to formless and formless Uden. I know that is principally a reference to, you know, the fact that Uden only, he only exists in voice?
In voice, yeah.
But could it also be a reference to mercury itself as a substance? Because if you look at there's also the adjective mercurial to describe something that doesn't have a single shape, that it's constantly shifting and moving, and it's very fluid, because even though mercury isn't, it's not a solid, it's not a fluid, it's sort of in between.
It exists in a solidus state, which is that it is solid at room temperature, but is also liquid. And then it also emits vapor in the air, meaning that it's solid, liquid, and gaseous at all three states at the same time.
They used to give that to kids to play with, which is insane.
They used to give it to people as medicine to cure, like, fevers. Oh, like,
oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good thing we live in the 21st century.
Yeah, I'm sure none of the things we're giving ourselves right now to treat anything are poisonous.
Oh, shade.
Touche. Touche.
Okay.
Okay, that's all the questions I had. Sorry for commandeering the podcast there for a moment.
Hello. Okay, thank you. So now we can move on to question four. And that question is more for Richie because he's very knowledgeable about the cut content of Bloodborne. And Richie, is there any interesting stuff about Odin?
I can tell you two things about Odin in earlier versions. First one is that the Odin Chapel and Odin Tomb area, they're called Gremia, not Odin. So it's possible that, like, there was a great one called Gremia there, but it also is possible that Odin is just, like, the idea of a great one in that area they may have come up with later on. The other thing is, this is actually a very new discovery that a lot of people probably don't know about, because I don't think we've ever mentioned it before, but I have seen the, like, very early version of the inside of Odin Chapel, and there's no incense urns, there's no NPCs, there's no chapel dweller. So it looks like the whole... And also the sewer area with Ariane is not there. The study area is not there. So it looks like the idea of Odin Chapel as the kind of hub was not there initially. It was just like, here's a building that happens to have the lantern in it. And then it gradually became like a place you sent people. And yeah.
Okay.
So the concept of Odin may not have been like, may have been kind of late. A light addition to the story.
Well, there's also the cut umbilical cord description, the 1.0 umbilical cord description, which seems to at least imply that there was a child between Odin and Queen Annalise.
Yeah.
There's a child of one of the Vilebloods, yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, I mean, Queen Annalise herself is another can of worms, because there's, like, four different versions of her.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, all of Kanehurst is, and you and I have talked about this before, but all of Kanehurst is just a mess.
Yeah, and I've been documenting all this stuff for MEF, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. Cool. Thank you, Richie. So, we can move on to other questions.
Okay.
The following questions are the ones I surveyed from Discord, and they're about Odin and the rune. And these ones are specifically Odin and Odin Chapel. So the last Larvitar and Arc Divinator Arki, as well as other people, drew parallels between Odin and Odin? Is that how you pronounce it? Odin?
Yeah, Odin.
Odin.
Odin. Okay. And do you think Odin is based on Odin? Do you think there are any similarities or parallels between the two?
No. I don't think there are.
Didn't JSF cover this in his video?
I covered it very briefly.
Because you talked about how it's translation to Japanese, it's not actually a reference to the name.
Do you want to start from the beginning then? Because this is like an old, okay. The graveyard area where you meet Gascoigne is called the Tomb of Odin. And in the center of it, there is a big statue depicting a large, like, bearded man.
That's correct.
Who I think one of his eyes is kind of scratched out. Like. Yeah. So back when we started first looking at the world and the story and everything, we figured, oh, Tomb of Odin, this is where Odin is buried. Ergo, the big statue is probably Odin, and he is a big bearded guy with one eye. And that's fits with the way Odin is depicted, because he is a big bearded man with one eye. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that was a theory to begin with, and then I think the more we looked into it, the more it turned out that that's probably not, it's not really how it is, but you can see sort of why we started there.
Hmm.
I guess, like, that statue it shows up in a bunch of places. Like, it also shows up in the Central Plaza outside the cathedral. It's the same statue.
Where does it show up in the Central Plaza?
It's where the giants are patrolling. There's like another version of it. Yeah, it's in the middle.
This isn't the same statue that's floating in the air.
No.
Is it?
No.
Well, no, still hasn't been fixed.
It must be part of the game.
I think it was 1.03.
That statue wasn't floating, and they patched it in.
Oh my god!
They broke it and never fixed it.
It's like the floating door in the sky in the Duke's archives.
Yeah. The other point was that the name Tomb of Erden, the more we looked into it, the more it became apparent that it wasn't supposed to be the tomb of someone called Erden. It was that this is the tomb, as in the graveyard, that is in Erden, as in the area with Erden Chapel. So it's just like, here's Erden. Like, a better translation would have been Erden Graveyard. So it's like, there's Erden Chapel and there's Erden Tomb, and they're just two connected areas.
Mm-hmm.
So it became clear, like, okay, Erden probably isn't the big bearded guy and he's probably not buried here. And then I guess just going into, like, the way it's written, it's like, if they wanted to, like, we went back and forth on Erden's name a lot. And, like, I guess I'll throw over to Redgrave now, because you talked about, like, the Oedipus connection and the eyes.
So that is that was something that was proposed a while back very early on in this was Oedipism, which is a name for autoenucleation, which is the removal of one's own eyes. And so obviously people were very interested in this. But when you take a look at the etymology behind Oedipism, it's more like eho, and it's more like it's just the word for toes.
Yeah.
And just the further back you go into the actual etymology of Oedipus, it doesn't really mix, especially when you look at the fact that the O-E that we use for Odin in English is kind of it's kind of just a function to make it easier for English speakers to pronounce, because it's more just like O-D-O in the Japanese script. And yeah. So I think a very interesting point to look at when you look at Oedipism, and obviously people were very interested when it was, oh, there's this word that has, you know, called Oedipism, Oedipism, that's the removal of one's own eyes. People were obviously very interested in that in regards to Odin and in regards to Bloodborne. I don't think that it is as definitive as people thought it was at the time.
Yeah, because this was pre-DLC, so it's before the concept of, like, blood-drunk eyes was actually a thing. We just knew that people in Bloodborne had their eyes covered, and there was they were apparently either missing or rotting. But we didn't have an in-game explanation as to why that was.
Right, and then the DLC gives us an explanation as to why people's eyes are missing.
Yeah. Yeah, and then, like, in the video Aegon's talking about, I looked at the way it was written in Japanese, which, as Redgrave was saying, is like, it's like Odon, it's like Odo. And I realized that there was a thing called an Odon device that is used during difficult pregnancies.
I like that in the questions here, I got credit for this one.
Oh, did you?
Yep.
Let me scroll down real quick.
And the Odon device is like, it's like a suction cup that latches onto the baby's head and, like, removes the baby. And I thought, oh, that's kind of like the Urn Festival, the way the messengers had the urns on their heads.
Well, and also you find the messenger Urn Festival in Odin Chapel.
Yeah. And then I just looked at the word another day and realized, oh yeah, it's just an anagram of Odeon, which is a building that's got voices in it. So it's probably just that. I think it's just that, because, like, I don't know if any of you have, if you know of any theaters that are called an Odeon, like, where you are.
Yeah, I worked at one for 8 years.
Yeah, so, well, yeah, I think Erden is probably just an anagram of Odeon, because an Odeon's a building that's designed to conduct voices.
I swear to God, I had that idea. I didn't even write it down, because I'm like, oh, that's stupid. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Okay. Especially, yeah, the whole thing about Odin only existing in voice. That makes a lot of sense, actually.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool. Does anybody have anything else to add to this one?
I do not.
No, I don't think so.
You don't have to. I'm just double checking. Okay. Thank you. Muradag had a question about the Tomb of Odin, but I guess we kind of covered it now.
Yeah, we covered this. It's any information on the statue.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Thank you. Before we go on, can everybody just clap on three? Because sometimes Zencastr desyncs a little bit. Okay. So it would help me.
Okay. Sure.
So 1, 2, 3, clapping on three, or go after that?
I like a good clap on three.
Okay. Clap on three. Ready?
Okay.
Okay.
1, 2.
Sin, you never said three.
We were way that off there.
It's fine.
It's not fine.
We were way off.
But it's fine. This will be good enough. Thank you, everyone. Okay. JD's had a question about the room in Odin Chapel, the one with the shelves and the chest and the tables.
Yeah.
Who built it, who used it, and why?
So, Rich, you and I, we actually had like a 8-hour conversation one day a long time ago.
We went back and forth a lot.
Wait, about this room?
Yeah.
Okay, so why does Richie give me crap about a 2-hour podcast about a lock shield?
Yeah, okay, but we didn't record the 8-hour conversation and put it on YouTube.
You're not about to complain about anything ever again.
Alright.
Well, I think the conclusion that Rich and I came to was, if it has to belong to someone in the game, which is a big if, because it could just be a random room that was owned by a random person that we never meet and we never hear of. But if it had to belong to a person in the game, the false Yosefka is the most likely candidate. And that during our fight with Gascoigne, because us defeating Gascoigne is the trigger which causes the false Yosefka to replace the real Yosefka.
Isn't it entering that room specifically, actually?
It's entering. Well, it's the cutscene where you walk into the chapel for the first time.
Yes, you're correct. Thank you for correcting me.
Yeah.
Because that is the trigger for the false Yosefka replacing the true Yosefka, and because the false Yosefka would certainly be a person in position to have a place there, would certainly have the knowledge of Bergenworth, would certainly have things in that manner. The most likely candidate for the owner of that room would have been the false Yosefka prior to her replacing the real Yosefka.
What is the note that's there?
But Bergman Spider hides all manner of rituals and keeps our lost master from us. A terrible shame. It makes my head shudder uncontrollably. Thank you. So the other alternative is actually based on the way that note's written in Japanese, because the word they use for master is the title that's given to Mikolash and no one else. Hmm. So the alternative is it's someone from Mensis writing about how the Bergenworth Spider is hiding the ritual and keeping our master from us. It means Rom's hiding the Red Moon, Mikolash is off in the Nightmare of Mensis, and we can't get there because the Red Moon's not coming out. So they're referring to him.
It's interesting. I mean, there's certainly a connection between Yosefka and Mensis, so that's interesting.
Thank you. And Richie, if somebody were really curious about the meaning of that note in detail, where would they go?
Well, if they were really desperate, they could look at the fascinating Notes of Bloodborne series on this channel.
Did you talk about that note in particular?
We talked about every note she made us. She made us go through, what is it, 12 notes?
I don't remember. There
every single note in Bloodborne had to go through them. I become increasingly delirious toward the end.
One note per episode.
Yeah. So
we also have a jingle. Richie, can you tell us the jingle?
Can you do? You're the one that does the jingle.
Yeah, it goes, Notes of Bloodborne. Very cool.
That's a very catchy jingle. That's great. That's great stuff.
Yeah, it has a certain hostage situation quality to it towards the end.
Wow.
Thank you. So next question. Zestus asks, could Odin just be a bunch of amygdala no one can see because they don't have enough insight?
No.
Right.
I was going to put that one down in a much kinder way, but...
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to... The reason I'm being blunt with this is because I get a lot of questions about what Odin actually is, and my answer here is probably going to cover a wide number of questions on this sheet, which is, if it has a form, it is not Odin.
Oh, that's deep.
If it is Mergo's wet nurse, if it is the doll... If it is anything that has a physical form, Odin does not have a physical form, therefore it is not Odin.
Well, and to Redgrave's point, those amygdala still have a physical form. It's just that you can't see them until you get a certain amount of insight.
Right.
So, yeah.
Well, are we referring specifically to the amygdala that's on the chapel?
Yes.
Well, I think the idea behind that is just that the amygdala seem to be attracted to, like, breaches, basically, in the waking world. And because Odin is in that chapel in some sense, or around that chapel, that amygdala has been attracted to it.
Does that hold... because that's also the amygdala that brings us to the Hunter's Nightmare, right?
Yeah.
So that could be... I don't know, like, I guess they could be there for both reasons, but...
Ascribing intentionality to the amygdala is always tricky.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh my god. Okay, what if...
Okay.
The amygdala is on the chapel, right?
Mm-hmm.
It is, yes.
But
mm-hmm.
because people don't have enough insight, they normally can't see it, right?
That is correct.
So the amygdala is like, hey, human, bring me snacks. And then the people in the chapel are like, Odin only exists in voice.
So you think it's pretending to be Odin?
No, yeah, because it knows people can't see it, so it just talks to them and then asks them for things.
So are you suggesting that the narrator, the third-person objective narrator, has been fooled by this amygdala who is asking it for snacks?
Yes.
Because if that's the case, then we pretty much have to rewrite everything we know about.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Still on page one.
Gosh. It's too early for this.
Look at Aegon.
It's 2 a.m. here.
Oh, I'm sorry. That's worse than, yeah.
We were talking about this. Richie just has to move to Canada and it's okay.
Yeah, that way we'll all be in the same time zone.
That would help, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you have three choices. Redgrave, you're in New York.
I am in New York State, yes, that's correct.
So you can go to New York, you can come to Toronto, or you could go to...
Laval!
Yeah, woo! Laval.
Yeah.
Yeah, we'll think about it afterward.
Okay.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, thank you, everyone. So... Princess Doom Kitty 3000 asks, if Odin had a form, what would it be?
I mean, be a big puddle of corruption, I guess.
Or potentially Mercury, based on what we were saying earlier.
Yeah, I mean, sort of, but again,
but he's the essence of the
Odin
Mercury
were to
we
have
were
a form...
He wouldn't be Odin.
He wouldn't be Odin.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I suspect the idea is just that Odin is a great one who's just ascended so far beyond, like, that it just transcended his physical form entirely. Well, I just thought the idea is like, the whole deal with the great ones is that they're, like, massively psychically evolved and their minds are very powerful. And the whole game is about, like, switching between, you know, the waking world and the dreamlands and sort of projecting back and forth. And I guess the idea is Odin is just so old and powerful that he just abandoned his physical form entirely. He's just an essence. I guess they say a similar thing about Queen Yharnam, that, like, she's gone, but her essence survives,
yeah,
her consciousness
like
survives.
That.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I suspect it's just something like that. It's just a very, very, very old great one that just sort of hangs around.
beyond the ability of humans to comprehend their existence, I guess.
Well, I mean, I think the reason that there are so many insane theories about Odin is because he is presented as something that by definition you cannot comprehend. Mm-hmm. And human nature just instinctively leads you to try and come up with an explanation for it.
Yeah, that was kind of an issue when the game first came out, is that everything no one understood, you just plugged Odin in.
Like the doll being
the doll is Odin, the character is Odin, the moon presence is Odin.
I mean, it reminds me, and I don't know if any of you were around for when Dark Souls 1 first came out.
No,
not really.
But you could plug the Firstborn into any insane theory about what was going on. The player character is the Firstborn, such and such is the Firstborn, on and on and on. Because it's something that's left in passing and is said, oh, this is information that we no longer have. And that just gives you such a good basis for insane theories.
Wasn't it at one point in the development supposed to be Andre? Yeah.
Yes.
Andre is the man.
He would like basically, you know, that path up to the first flame.
Yeah, he'd move the statue and open a door.
He would remove the statue and open a door that would let you go down there.
Yeah. That's why like Andre has a unique model and a unique moveset that most people don't actually see because you have to fight.
And his lips move.
Yeah, yeah, he was meant to be a much more significant character. Mm-hmm.
And then he showed up in Dark Souls 3.
Yeah.
Yep.
I don't remember if there was ever an explanation for that.
No. Well, I get. Isn't that just like he's bound to the flame?
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah. Like that.
All right.
Okay. Thank you. Princess Capertiller says, it seems that the Odin runes all have an element of blood on them in the artwork, but then it seems that there are other runes like Hunter that also have blood on them, and then there are some like Blood Rapture that seem like they should have blood on them but don't. What is the nature of this discrepancy? Is it deliberate?
I don't think it's, well, like if you look at the runes, like a bunch of them have like a. Some of them, but only some of them, have a description up the top that'll say, like the Odin ones, they say, like, this is a liaison rune. And then, like, as if that's in-game terminology and that is never mentioned again. Yeah.
Yeah, as if that's some kind of mechanic or something that is just...
A liaison rune? Where are you reading this?
Like, serrated or something.
It's liaison.
Where, like, in what rune?
It's one, I think it's Odin Rive, or... It says, like, it's specifically, like, this is a liaison rune, and I think it's meant to reference the idea that you're making contact with Odin as a result of the writhing.
I'm reading a Carol rune that transcribes inhuman sounds. Writhe sees a subtle mucus in the warmth of blood and acknowledges visceral attacks as one of the darker hunter techniques.
Let's go to Bloodborne-Wiki.
Yeah.
I mean, the... Ariana's cord specifically refers to the eldritch liaison.
Yeah.
But not the runes, though, I don't think.
No, I'm pretty sure one
of them is called a liaison rune.
And none I know of the what you're are. Talking about, but I couldn't pinpoint
so
it.
So if you go to Bloodborne-Wiki, the one true wiki, it says here
the only wiki that asked my permission to copy and paste large chunks of the Pale Blood Hunt.
No, Mev is the best, and she lets me like use screenshots from it because they're like amazing.
All of the other wikis just did it without asking.
Yeah,
but Mev was the only one who asked first, so I have enormous amount of respect for that.
And the original stuff that I've written for the wiki has also appeared on other wikis without my permission.
Yeah,
but whatever. Yeah.
So here it says that. Odin Wright has a special note that says a liaison rule, visceral attack.
Yeah, there we are. Yeah. Bullets. Yeah, it's Wright.
What's a special note?
I think it's never explained.
No, but where is it? Where is the special note? Like on the rune or?
Like when you're in your inventory and you hover over it, I believe.
It says liaison rune. That's like the short description. That rune's Odin Writhe is actually called Odin Liaison in the early versions. Mm-hmm. They changed it to Writhe later on.
Mm-hmm.
So that's probably where it comes from, but like, yeah.
So is it not like...
Go ahead. There you go.
Well, I was just thinking a liaison rune. So perhaps suggesting that that rune in particular was born out of a direct encounter or some sort of direct communication.
I think that's what the ride is getting at.
Whereas other ones could be based on sort of secondhand accounts of what was said.
No, but I think it's a liaison because it's Erden Writhe, and Erden is using your blood as a medium and is writhing around inside you. So the rune is the liaison.
Specifically to impregnate you. Like that is the very specific meaning of what Erden is doing. Is he's attempting to find a female host that he can impregnate.
Mm.
Yes.
And I mean, I don't know if we're going to go into the depictions of the runes, because some of them are kind of nonsensical, but Erden Writhe has a very...
Well,
I actually have something for this, and I know that this question isn't until much later, where it says, what does the drawing on Writhe represent?
Right.
Sorry. Yeah. If you want to know what my life is like, it's answering that question about every single rune in the game, and if you say, I don't know, she says, not good enough!
No, but this, Richie... This, like, it's so uncanny, the resemblance, that you just, there's going to be no more question anymore. And that is, have you ever seen...
Okay.
So the Erden Writhe, so if you're looking at it, picture in your mind the movie poster for True Lies.
You've lost me.
Jesus, you're a bully too.
True Lies movie poster.
Because, look, it's got the little swirl. Okay, that's, like, the glimmer in Arnold Schwarzenegger's eyes as he's looking slightly off camera.
Yeah, I don't see it. Sorry.
Oh, my gosh. Redgrave. It's actually a reference to...
Oh, Lord have mercy.
I'm not saying anything.
Their video on Death Stranding, when she looked at the cover of Death Stranding, which has Norman Reedus's face on, and he's looking slightly off camera. And she said, oh, it looks just like the movie poster for True Lies because it has someone looking slightly off camera.
I guess they kind of are similar.
And then it occurred to me that if you could see the resemblance there.
Yeah. Thank you, Redgrave. So, thank you.
No, that's all right.
Sorry, I'll let you guys actually address the question now.
What were we talking about?
So you have a safe distance where this can be funny to you.
Well, but there is a lot of significance, I'd say, to the brightness screen. And
brightness. Oh, Jesus! Oh, my God!
I really enjoyed that
video yesterday. I'm getting caught and exposed as the only person who doesn't actually watch your videos.
It's fine. That podcast was live tweeted by the designer of I Want to Be the Ghost.
That's crazy.
What?
Yeah, Kyan was like tweeting about it while he was listening
no
to
way.
It.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I love I Want to Be the
Ghost. He was doing it. Excellent. Yeah, the
one of my favorite things of all time when it comes to like handmade video game
podcasts. Yeah, Kyan is a fan of the podcast.
That's awesome. Oh! Because
I am absolutely in love with I Want to Be the Guy. Anyway, what were we talking about?
Princess Capra Killer's
question. I think it was referring to the way that like the Erden Writhe rune is like it's drawn in a with like this bloody texture to it that some runes have and some runes don't have.
I suspect that's definitely deliberate.
Specifically what Erden Writhe is and... It's been a long time since I've talked about this, but I believe I went over this in my video on Erden. And it's an incredibly cluttered looking rune compared to most of them.
Mm.
Because most of the runes, when you look at the way they're actually drawn, it's fairly straightforward. But Erden Writhe is really two pictures layered on top of one another. It's the astrological symbol for Mercury layered on top of an ichthys, which is just a vagina.
Right.
So,
or a fish,
if you are a Christian trying to redefine pagan symbols to fit your religion, yes,
and to put something on your bumper,
right? Anyway, the point is, I think it's very clear, unlike most runes, which aren't particularly clear with what they are, I think it's very clear what that rune is saying, which is, you know, drawing corruption and corruption involved inside of a womb, and all of these things that are very much in line with Odin's characterization.
Mm-hmm.
So something else that's probably also worth mentioning, based on the conversation that Richie and Sin had in the podcast on the metamorphosis runes, is you all seemed a bit confused. I imagine it was just late or something, about the sort of yellow shining light part on that rune, in like right in the center.
Yeah. We figured it out, though.
Oh, yeah, because it's just the higher versions of that rune, right?
No, it's a nightlight.
Okay, well, getting back to Princess Capertiller's question, I do think that it's deliberate, the way that they've designed the runes.
Yeah.
And this one is, as Redgrave noted, there's a lot going on here. But yeah, I do think it's deliberate. I don't know what the significance is in particular. You'd have to look at every single one and do a sort of comparative analysis, like which ones have blood, which ones don't, and why. But
well, the two Odin ones do.
Yes.
They both have the blood texture.
And the weird thing about this whole thing, and something that I asked Richie on, I think, the first episode of Runes of Bloodborne, is that the rune... Richie, what? What's the problem?
Keep going. Go.
The rune workshop tool says, Provost Willem would have been proud of Carol's runes, as they do not rely upon blood in any measure.
Mm-hmm.
And there's clearly blood on some of the runes.
Yes, but they don't rely upon it.
Well,
although you do,
presumably,
well, a lot of this goes into what the hell a Carol rune is, which is a topic that you could spend decades analyzing, because it's when you pick up these runes from bodies, what are you actually picking up? Is it a physical piece of, is it a physical item? When Valter hands you the impurity rune, is he actually handing you something physical that you carry around with you? Or is he saying something that imprints into your mind? And so it's honestly, like, I feel like that's probably a topic for another day. It's,
well, Sin actually solved this by just saying that they're on a pebble, and you just pick up the pebble.
Yeah.
Oh, well, thank you, Sin.
You're welcome.
And I'm just happy to go with that, because it means we don't have to keep discussing it. I'll just say they're on pebbles from now on. And
yeah, because you have like a little pouch and you put all your pebbles there. And that's how you have all your runes.
Makes sense.
So why do you need a bloody iron brand in order to put the pebble into your skull, I guess is my question.
How else are you going to put a pebble into your skull?
I mean, that's fair.
Oh my gosh.
Okay, thank you very much. And the last question for this section is by Atlas. How come Gascoigne's younger daughter drops formless Odin if she's sent to Yosefka?
Because Yosefka was experimenting on her. The other thing about Gascoigne's daughter when you send her to Yosefka is that she gives you lead elixirs.
Mm-hmm. The imposter Yosefka?
Yeah, if you send her to imposter Yosefka, you get lead elixirs, which
No, it's not lead elixirs, it's the blue...
No, they patched it. You used to get...
What? It's they a changed it?
Yeah, hang on.
Why?
God. I had to document all of this. Basically, you get lead elixirs, or got from Gascoigne's younger daughter. And they... The problem is, I spent, like, almost a year on 1.0, like, with updates disabled to get information for the wiki.
It's very fascinating, actually. Right. Like, things just bleed differently. Like, it's very interesting going back and playing on 1.0.
Okay, so in the current version, she does give you two lead elixirs, it says here. This is what I'm getting at, because lead elixirs are something that you get when someone is in contact with the nightmare.
Correct.
Because you find them, I think the only other ones in the waking world are in the little chapel in Yahagul where the other amygdala is. And that's then the correct. Rest of them, you have to go into the nightmare to find.
They so drop the fact off that, with the nightmare hunters.
Yeah.
Except one caveat is that Alfred Queenkiller does use lead elixirs if you attack him.
Yeah. Yeah. But, like, the... I think it's meant to be significant that Gascoigne's daughter, like, Yosefka's performing these experiments, and specifically on her,
mm-hmm.
she generates the lead elixirs, which... And that is what causes her also to drop the Erden rune, because if she doesn't make it to the clinic, she won't drop it.
Also,
so something,
I,
yeah.
I think, Rich, I think you were the first one who brought this up to me in particular, but I don't know if you were the first one who sort of put this together. But when you look at the formless Odin runes and the Odin writhe runes and who drops which, there's a very clear difference between who yeah. drops a formless Odin rune and who drops an Odin writhe rune.
Yeah, this was my whole like thesis when I talked about right. Odin. Yeah.
I think you were the first person who brought this to my attention who really made it clear. And I was like, oh, that's really interesting, which is that when yeah. the formless Odin runes are dropped by a man and a woman who is prepubescent. The Odin writhe runes are both dropped by women of childbearing age.
Mm. Mm.
And so you look at that and it's a very clear and distinct divide in people who may have had contact with Odin but drop different things.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And Gascoigne's daughter, obviously, she must know of the Erden area, because if you tell her to go there, she knows how to get there. Her father hangs around the area, so she's probably passed through that place, and Erden is sort of, like, squidging around a little bit, and then Yosefka is able to... The imposter is able to draw that out. The imposter drops Writhe, and Adela drops Writhe, and they're both connected to the Healing Church. They've both presumably been in that area. But yes, something that Imposter Yosefka did to Gascoigne's daughter, like she got more in touch with the nightmare somehow than the other subjects did, and that seems to be what triggers the formless Erden to sort of start manifesting the writhe. Sorry, yeah, formless Erden to start manifesting in her head.
Hmm.
Hmm.
Okay. Thank you, Richie. So before we move on to the next section of the questions, we have to clap. You ready?
Okay. How about I count us off, and I'll count us to three, and on three, we will all clap.
Okay.
Okay, one, two, three.
Okay. Excellent. Thank you.
I cannot believe you went one, two, pause, clap.
Yup.
We were waiting for the three.
Oh my gosh.
The following questions are about Erden and their descendants. Princess Shook asks, why would Adela and Yosefka had Erden Writhe? Neither of them became pregnant. Did Erden possess them? If so, why?
I think we covered that kind of in the last question, that like they didn't become pregnant because they don't have the right kind of blood.
Mm-hmm.
So Erden he's found a functional like uterus, and he's sort of poked around in it, but he's like, no, this is it's the wrong blood. I can't conceive with this blood, so you just have the writhe, which is the
right. It's not corrupted in
the sort of the mark that he's left. Yeah, whereas when you bring Ariana there, suddenly she's got the Kanehurst blood, she can conceive.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Excellent. Okay, thank you. Artfighter 3, Third Funk, asks, are those slug babies in Upper Cathedral Ward Odin's kids?
No,
but it's an understandable that they use this model as Ariana's child.
Yeah.
But they are celestial children. They are kin of the cosmos. They're presumably experiments done on the children of Yharnam in the orphanage.
That or they just slithered up out of Ys.
Yes, sure. Because
if you go to Ys, it's absolutely crawling with them. And from what we can gather, the Altar of Despair is how you get to and from Ys. So.
Although in Ys, notably, the Celestial Children are much larger than you find in Upper Cathedral Ward.
Yeah,
are they?
Yeah.
Yes, they are. They're
they come in different sizes. Ariana's is also, like, it's smaller and it has a different texture to it.
Yeah, it has a like a bloody text on it, presumably to show
that it's because it's just been born. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
And those slugs look like Abrietus, right?
Yes.
If you look at, you know, the Celestial Children and Rom and Abrietus, you start to see a sort of, if not familial resemblance, at least a species resemblance.
Yeah. Like, the key is that the ones in Upper Cathedral Ward don't drop the third chord, so they're not the children of great ones. They're just, like, a larval stage of something.
Right. They're, you know, surrogates.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to use that term.
Yeah.
So then, could Abrietus be Odin's child?
Oh, God.
No. Because, well, no, but I think you have a very good question there.
Thank you, Edgar.
But Abrietus is kin in the same sense that Willem is kin. And so I think if you're looking at a much more likely scenario, it's the things that happened in Thumaru were basically the same things that are happening now. You had people experimenting with the old blood. You had people doing things. You know, Lauren is explicitly said to have had the exact same issues as what Yharnam had. And so if you look at the Thumerians and the Thumerian civilization as what Yharnam will look like in 500 years or in 5,000 years or whatever, because the timeline's not very clear, you can kind of look at Abrietus as maybe an incredibly advanced version of the Brain Suckers or of Willem or of any of the kin that we encounter in Yharnam.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's closer to Rom than to, like, the true sort of great ones.
Right.
Right.
Okay.
And this all kind of ties into whether or not you want to call the kin great ones. Which, whether or not you want to refer to the kin of the cosmos as great ones, whether or not you want to call Abrietus or Rom great ones, doesn't really matter.
I knew that this conversation was going to go there.
We had this really exact matter, conversation with Smotown, like, this time last week.
Mm-hmm. Every time Abrietus comes up, it's like, oh, God.
Well, I think it's totally understandable, because I think it's the game's fault for being so wishy-washy and muddy with how they describe the great ones. But the only thing that really matters is that you acknowledge that there's a difference between something like Abrietus and something like Kaos.
Yeah, and they make a point in the game that Abrietus is, like, left behind by the other great ones. So, yeah, like, she is like Rom. She's like she's an evolutionary, like, she's a transitional form, basically, between...
At the end of the day, if you want to call her a great one, that's a semantic discussion. All that really matters as far as analyzing the lore goes is you acknowledge there's a difference between Rom and the moon presence. These are very categorically different beings.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
The Peas and Corn asks, how many babies did Odin have with humans?
We have no idea.
So I think, actually, we should ask Che Pablo's question first.
Oh, yeah?
All right.
Because I think this is incredibly relevant.
Okay. So Che Pablo asks, is Murgo the son of Odin, moon presence, or cause?
So I was under the impression that I wouldn't be saying something controversial by saying that Murgo was the son of Odin, but apparently I have some disputing claims here. So I will ask Rich what he thinks.
I don't know who Murgo is the son of. Mm-hmm. Is this because when we encounter Murgo in the pram, there's no body, so you go formless, therefore formless.
No, I don't Odin think so.
Is the dead. Yeah, I don't think that
I
either.
I have heard that being furthered as, like, a main piece of evidence, though, but that's...
But I disagree. I disagree with that in particular.
Because we see Odin's kid in the game, and it's clearly got...
And we also see Murgo in the game.
The stone?
And he's a stillborn child inside of Queen Yharnam.
Yeah, so Murgo has physical form.
Yes, absolutely.
And insofar as he doesn't, it's likely because FromSoft didn't want to have a dead kid in their game.
Well, I think FromSoft did and Sony didn't.
Right. Okay, I think fair enough.
That's, yeah.
I don't know. I've seen Oseros's original stuff, and it is gruesome in a sense that I can only imagine the developers looked at it and said, "Actually, probably not."
Yeah.
Because
it is gruesome. I'm assuming in a very uncomfortable way.
I also assume this is why you can't send Gascoigne's daughter to Erden Chapel. Because they don't want to be in a position where the player can kill a child. So she either dies on her way or she gets turned into a block.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
Too. Because, I mean, there were skeleton children in Dark Souls 1, and there were unborn fetus enemies in Demon Souls.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But
it can't be a realistic child, basically.
Right, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, because I think that the most compelling evidence is, and it's all circumstantial, but it's simply that it follows the pattern to a T of what's going on in modern day, which is that you have this corrupt, tainted blood, the Thumerian blood that is inherited by Annalise, who is either Thumerian or is a cousin of the Thumeru, or there was some kind of civil war or something, and some of them went up to Kanehurst or whatever. Regardless, Thumerian. Ariana she's definitely from Kanehurst. My belief is that she's Annalise's daughter.
I think she's probably the baby in the portrait.
She's the baby in the portrait, and directly across from the portrait, you find Ariana's dress. Like, I don't think it's particularly subtle.
Do you want to do a slight digression about Ariana's age? Because I just found this out. Okay, so you know how when you create a character in Bloodborne, you have to set the age?
Yes, that's right. What is her slider set at?
Yeah, we know now. And her slider is set, it's like about as high as it will go before she sort of like qualifies as being middle-aged. So if you just take the raw numbers, she's meant to be, at least in appearance-wise, like about, we'll say like not quite twice, but like 1.5 times the age of like Imposter Yosefka and like Edgar and stuff. So if you assume that like the choir kids are in their like early 20s, she's meant to be like in her mid to late 30s. Mm-hmm. Which lines up kind of with the sacking of Kanehurst. Like, she's an older character. She would have come. She could have come over to Yharnam before the Healing Church actually showed up as a baby,
as an infant,
and it would be consistent. Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So I think if you look at all of that stuff, you have that Uden's specific, like the most capable and the most what's the word I'm looking for. Compatible hosts that Uden has found for his children are in these Thumerian women of great power. And so I think you have Queen Annalise, who is specifically attempting this, Ariana, who successfully has this, and then you have Queen Yharnam, who in the past had a child with a great one. And I think that I think that all of the evidence points towards that being Uden's child.
Mm-hmm.
Right. My only issue with that is that, like, if you take the view that Erden is localized around Erden Chapel, like, Ariana doesn't, as far as we know, have that kid if you don't send her there.
As far as we know, she does not. Although, it's specifically mentioned, go ahead. But yeah, as far as we
know. Yeah, so, like, I guess it depends on how many great ones you think there are, because, like, it doesn't have to be we don't know if there's, like, six great ones or 1,000 of them at this point.
I think that everything we do when we talk about Bloodborne's lore is prefaced with the statement and with the assumption that if we're going to make a connection, it's connected to something we can identify. Because it is entirely possible that everything is completely incidental to stuff that is not ever mentioned in the game.
Yeah. Especially when, like, we were talking about Ace last time. And, like, once you factor in the idea that, like, okay, there's Lauren, the remnants of Lauren is the Nightmare Frontier Mensis area. But there's also this place called Ace. We never find out anything about that. Does that mean that Ace is above the Nightmare Frontier? If so, is there another place above East? We don't know. Like, People right. talk about the Dark Souls games having cycles, which they kind of, if you actually break it down, they don't really have cycles. It's more like the world changes and people try to resist it, but the change is inevitable and what you end up with is different. It's not back and forth.
Arguably, there is one massive, like, multiverse cycle with the Age of Grey, but yes, you're talking about the Agents of Fire and Dark, yeah.
What I'm getting at with Bloodborne is that, like, Bloodborne very explicitly is saying, like, this is actually cyclical. Like, these right. events happen, and then it either falls to pieces or a great one is produced, and then it just happens again. And it's just, like, so when we know from the DLC that you see, like, these layer upon layer of, like, nightmares, and you can only see
that,
downward.
That layering is in the base game, but it's a lot more subtle.
Yeah. Yeah, it's, yeah, but like it does
stone and things like Siderite. It is yeah, in the base game, yeah. but it's a lot more subtle.
But it confirms it that like right. that's how it works. So we know that because you can't see the layer above you, that like we don't know how many layers there are. Because we for like I was saying, for all we know, like the remnants of Ys are above the remnants of Lauren.
Mm-hmm.
And then maybe above that is something else. Like this could go just for eternity.
Mm-hmm.
So
and in fact, it probably does.
Yeah, yeah. So we don't know how many great ones there are. I guess, like, to me, you know when you encounter Yharnam and she's praying at the altar?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you encounter Yharnam, which, when you encounter in the Chalice Dungeon?
In the Chalice Dungeon, she's praying at an altar.
With the emblem of the hunter on it.
Yeah, yeah. So that, like, that altar, like, when you fight her in the set Tomb of Ihel Chalice, the altar has a top to it. You can get that altar in a variant where the top is missing and it has a gigantic hunter's mark on it. So if you assume yeah. she's that mark is there, she's praying to, like, a hunter's mark. The great one that puts the hunter's mark in your head is the Moon Presence. So it's possible that she is praying to the Moon Presence. And if that's true, then that raises the possibility that the Moon Presence is Murgo's father.
That is certainly a possibility. I mean, when you think about it that way.
Yeah, and I mean, yeah. I guess, like, the issue is, like, this game went through so many iterations and revisions that it's not actually clear what some things mean anymore.
I think that fact that it went through so many iterations has led to a final product which does have a very interesting
yeah,
concept.
Yeah, like a good example is like when you were saying the hunter's mark looks like a hanged person. And throughout the game, you actually right. you see bodies in that position. And then, you know, three, 4 years later, digging into it and realized, oh, that's because early on it was actually totally explicit that instead of lanterns, there would have been corpses hung in that pose. And it's explicitly supposed to be that thing. And that's why you became, like you're bound to, like, the hanged man very, very specifically. Things like that that have just mm-hmm. altered throughout it. So
mm-hmm.
who knows what they initially were thinking of with that altar, but yeah.
And, I mean, people ask me a lot why I am not, I wouldn't say I'm dismissive of cut content, but that I am so hesitant to use it as the foundation for new theories. And the simple answer is that we just don't know why it was cut or why it was there in the first place.
Yeah.
And so it's like people talk, what did you think about, you know, the conversation you can have with Maria and the Simon? How does this change? And the answer is it doesn't, because it's fascinating and interesting as a what if scenario or a piece of the development's history. But as yeah. far as the finished product is concerned, we have no real way of identifying why it's there.
Well, it's sort of like, because, you know, in fiction, so to use an example from A Song of Ice and Fire, George R. R. Martin originally intended, I think I have these two characters correct, but originally intended for Arya and Jon to have sort of a incestuous relationship. So, yeah, you could look at that and say, okay, you have the authorial intent, at least at some point in time. How does that relate to the story today? Yes, they're really close in the story today, but yeah, I don't know that that's evidence of anything.
My response is, like, it to me, it's not really about intent as in figuring out the intent of what they were trying to do and go with that. It's that so many people who talk about these, especially Bloodborne, will sit there and see something like the Hunter's Mark and they'll say, I don't understand this. I have to find the answer. And they'll bash their head against it for like weeks and weeks and weeks.
Right.
And the reason I bring up like that's a removed thing, that's a changed thing, is to say like, hey, you're not going to find the answer by like looking at the game. It's the, it's the way it is because it was something else and then they moved it around and you're not going to like secretly solve Miyazaki's five-dimensional chess by just staring at this. Like, you have to take a step back and realize that like things just changed in development and this thing is not all going to click together like a perfect puzzle. That's why I bring that stuff up.
Yeah, and sometimes it helps you sleep at night, because one thing that was really messing with me was that, you know how Mikalash, when you meet him, he's all about cause, but then using like weapons associated with Abritus? And I was like, what's up, Mikalash? Why you do that? And he didn't tell me, but then Richard told me.
Yeah, that's a good example. Like, or like the way that there's like when people met Ligarius and were saying like, well, it's weird, like Ligarius must be the king of Kanehurst, and then you had like, you had like well, no, because what happened is you had that character, and the way he's presented and designed and like the fight plays out is saying, okay, this guy is the king of Kanehurst. But then you had the description saying, no, Ligarius is the leader of a group of people who attacked Kanehurst. And, like, again, you can beat your head against that, like, trying to, what are they trying, what do they mean? And the answer is it's like that because he was the king of Kanehurst, and then they changed it, like, pretty late in the day. So, like, it's not about, like, oh, Miyazaki's grand intent, we must appreciate it.
But, Rich, have you seen my video debunking that? Because I debunked definitively that Logarius is, in fact, not the king of Kanehurst. And I will send you that after we are finished here.
Does it involve a poster of True Lies?
No, it involves a chair.
The next time somebody suggests to you that Logarius is the king of Kanehurst, I want you to show them this proof, okay? This is my mission for you. Okay. This is the proof right here. Logarius would not fit in this chair. We good? Everybody clear? Good.
Oh, speaking of which, Richie, you know how there was caught content of somebody killing Maria?
Oh, Lord. Was it Ludwig?
Thank you, Redgrave!
I remembered.
Yeah. Canonically, Redgrave is the nicest one out of y'all. I just want you
to know. No, that is definitely Aegon.
No, Aegon was... sassy today.
Aegon is very sassy. You wouldn't know it, but every time Aegon and I were setting up to record, before the cameras went on, he was always swearing up a storm, talking about what's bullshit. And then the cameras would come on and he'd be like, hello everyone, Aegon of Astoria here. I'm like, you lying motherfucker.
That's a pretty good impression. Okay, well, but in my defense, that was, you know, before I had any sort of recording infrastructure set up, so we were constantly flying by the seat of our pants, and like
it was,
were bringing your PS4 down to like the basement to plug it directly.
Yes, into I brought it down to the basement of my apartment building in order to plug it directly in.
Oh my god,
to the modem.
His PS4 was like hanging by a wire, and like
it was not great.
Yeah, that was stressful, but it worked out well in the end.
Mm-hmm. Okay, awesome. I think we kind of answered Shook's question.
Oh, yeah, about Ariana.
Although there is an important mention in Princess Shook's question, which is, did he intentionally impregnate Ariana? And I think it's clear to note that it's incredibly difficult to ascribe any bit of intention to what Uden or the Moon Presence are interested in, just because they don't really operate under the same laws of morality or even it's difficult to ascribe to what they're doing.
They do the Lovecraftian inscrutable outer being thing, but then at the same time, they have these very identifiable parental urges. So they're sort of, yeah, they're an odd case. Right. I've actually written about this, but it's not shown up in a video.
Oh, and then here we have Aegon taking credit for...
No, that wasn't me taking credit. Someone else ascribing credit to me.
And Her Majesty Princess Capertiller, who I remember from the previous videos I was on. Her Majesty was accurate. That was Richard's...
Okay, so just to read the question.
The question. Are you aware of Aegon of Astora's theory about Jorge... George Odon? Odon. Yeah, he invented the Odon device to facilitate childbirth. He said that messenger and festival was similar to how the Odon device wraps around the head of an infant. Yeah, we covered that already.
It's also covered in more detail in your video on Odin.
Yeah. I like how Princess Capertiller is on point. I was under the impression that was Zirich's idea.
Can we return briefly to Princess Shook's question by way of bringing a question from later on in the list up to this section?
Sin is a big stickler for the outline. If she doesn't have guests and she's not trying to be polite, she will pick up the outline and go like this. She will loudly shake it in front of the microphone.
Structure is very important.
Yeah, fair enough. Yeah. I understand that from when I have guests on my show, so
fair enough. Yeah, this channel is well known for being very tightly structured.
Okay, thank you, everyone. Can we move on to the next question section?
I believe so.
Okay. Let's do it. Okay. The following questions are about Odin and their influence. Killing It asks, do the Great Ones have any sort of defined pantheon? And if so, is Odin at the top?
No.
Yeah, they don't. Yeah. They're just...
They
don't even know of each other's existence.
Right.
Like, they're just... Like, I think that the point is, like, Great One is just a... Like, it's a human... distinction that's given to these things.
It's a human term for these things that are outside of our comprehension. Whereas you look at the most famous pantheons in human history, you have the Greek pantheon, you have the Hindu pantheon. These are all gods that are related to one another and are similar beings. The Great Ones are completely asimilar from one another. The only thing in common they have is that they are way more powerful than us.
Yeah. It's kind of like saying, like, you know, like dinosaur, which encompasses a whole lot of different species, you know. There's not one specific thing called a dinosaur.
So the Great Ones are dinosaurs.
Oh, yeah, Richie, so the Great Ones are dinosaur. How does that feel, Richie, when I say something and then you repeat it back to me?
Are you mocking me or are you mocking Redgrave?
No, I'm mocking you because you do that to me all the time. I say something and then you repeat it back to me and then it's like, thank you,
Redgrave. I was worried she was mocking me for a second.
No, Redgrave, you and I are a team now.
Great.
What you need to understand, Sin, is that the niceness of the guests is like compressed into just this one thing. But like we've been doing this for 2 years. So you can't bring up like
Oh man.
Here, let me ask you a question, Sin. Do you give Richard credit every time he doesn't mock you? Because I would imagine that the number of times he doesn't mock you greatly outweigh the number of times he does.
Well, there is this one video on Patreon that's titled "Richie was nice to me once," so there you go.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Mm. But there's also on Patreon "King of Shade," where you, as Kasin is very normal and well adjusted, where you go through everything we've recorded and just remove times when I've sassed you out of context and make a compilation of them.
Yes.
But several of them are just like, I knew the correct time of day, but you took that as an insult.
Oh, Lord.
Thank you. Okay, so the next question is from Atlas. Atlas asks, some people say that Odin is ascended higher than the other great ones because of their formless state. I personally don't believe this, but I'd love to hear your thoughts on this.
I think we just addressed that, didn't we?
We did, but I think it's the other way around. It's not that Odin is ascended higher than the great ones because of their formless state. It's that Odin has a formless state because it has ascended higher and is more unknowable.
Whoa! Yeah, I see.
Yeah, it's like astral projected away from its physical form. Right. So it's like the ultimate sort of point, like what Willem is aiming at, the idea that it's just a mind and there's nothing else.
Right.
Yeah.
Awesome. Thank you. Princess Shook asks, are there any signs of Odin having any presence or influence outside of the chapel? Because it seems like his interactions are exclusively around the chapel.
You find Odin runes in the chalice dungeons, but I don't know how specifically, like, seriously you want to take that.
And in Lower Thimble.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So I don't know how seriously you want to take. I mean, like, if you want to get, like, if you assume that Tumuru Ihil is buried underneath the city of Yharnam, which I think is what they're getting at.
I would agree with that, yes.
Yeah, then Odin's runes showing up there is, like, consistent. Like, if you just assume Odin is maybe had worshippers in Tumuru Ihil, and then just over time it's been reduced to that.
Which I think he did, which I think are what the pilgrims specifically are.
Yeah, and also, like, you find...
Our priests of Odin.
You find the big, the not quite the highest tier, it's like the level four tier Odin runes up the top of that chapel.
Yes.
In the same way you would find one in the labyrinth. So, like, that's presumably, like, it's been a site of Odin worship since the city was founded, and
the city was founded, guess, like, long before.
Yeah, it's founded so long ago, they've forgotten what it means.
They've forgotten who founded it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but yeah.
Aegon, were you about to say something?
Yes. I can't remember what it is, though. But one thing I will say about... Because I am really interested in this problem about Odin's influence seemingly being centered around, like, Odin Chapel. And
right.
It's something to agree with.
Well, so obviously JSF sees it one way, which is it's localized around the chapel. Redgrave sees it another way.
Yeah.
Earlier we had the question about by Princess Shook, did he intentionally impregnate Ariana? And so that just had me wondering about Odin Chapel as this place where, like, this is going to sound absurd. But, you know, is it like within Odin Chapel and its immediate vicinity, they're like impregnating radio waves, sort of just extending out?
Yeah, no, I think it is that.
Well, and so to that point, because, and I apologize for contravening the structure here, because this is the very last question, but I do think it belongs higher up. Or it's not so much a question by Princess Ship, but have Aegon on to discuss Odin's form as soundscape. I know that's not a question, but it's something I need in my life. So even before I looked at this, I actually went, I loaded up Bloodborne. I used headphones because when you're using headphones, you hear so many more things that otherwise you just might not realize are there.
Let's be clear here that this is, you know, we have Aegon to thank here for a lot of sound related discoveries. Aegon was the first one who discovered that Gehrman's crying and the Orphan of Kaz's crying was in fact not just similar, but the exact same sound file.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and
we have you to thank for Gehrman as the Orphan of Kaz's father theory. but we also have you to thank for significant discoveries in that nature.
Oh, much appreciated. But I've forgotten half of the stuff that we discovered in that series. Can't believe it was like 4 years ago now. But
But so on the question of the soundscape of the Odin Chapel. And so for those who aren't aware, soundscape is take the same concept. You know, you have a landscape, you look, you see the landscape, but a soundscape is similarly, you know, it's a scape that you hear. So it's the collection of all the sounds that you have in a particular area. And, you know, that can tell you a story about where those sounds are emanating and what those sounds themselves mean and how they impact upon the people within that soundscape. And so FromSoft is very attentive to such things. And so one of the earlier examples, the first one I noticed, I think, was in the Duke's Archives. When you're walking, you know, there's that long hallway before you actually enter the archives from basically the entrance to Anor Londo, and there's those two armored boars there, and you can hear a distinct whispering in the background. And similarly, it's a very similar sound. It's not the same, but the moment you enter the sewer underneath Odin Chapel, so you where you find the Ariana later.
The area in which Ariana gives birth.
Precisely.
Yeah.
As soon as you enter that sewer, you can hear what sounds like one or maybe two different voices whispering. And then if you go up to the chapel itself, it's still there. It's kind of drowned out by the sound of the lamp, but it's still there. If you walk out, you walk a little bit further on from the lamp, it's still there, but there's sort of a low rumbling noise as well. And then the second you leave the actual chapel, it's gone. So there is a very distinct, so I don't know if Princess Ship was being sarcastic here or not. I suspect not, but indeed I went and I checked out the soundscape, and it does appear as though there is a very particular, very specific soundscape for Odin Chapel. I don't know
if I have a question, and I don't know if you have the answer to this, but there is also a faint sound of one or two people whispering whenever you use Madman's Insight or whenever you gain insight otherwise.
It's like six or seven people, indeed.
Okay, so I was wondering if you had any comparison between those two sets of whispering.
I don't think they're the same, but okay. Similar. So, like, I believe with the Madman's Wisdom or the Madman's Knowledge, it's like eight or nine different voices overlapping, whispering or just making noises, whereas this, it's one or two. So, and they sort of run into each other. It's not a long loop. It's like 10 seconds, I think, but... And so, you know, I found that really, really interesting. And so I tested it not only with a character that had like 60 insight, but also with one that only had like one or two. One that was at the end of the game where Murgo had been defeated, but not Garamond. And one that was, you know, had only just reached the Odin Chapel. And the soundscape is always the same. So it doesn't actually depend on anything else. It's just that's the soundscape of Odin Chapel.
Interesting.
Let me ask you, if I go into Odin Chapel with a recorder, record those sounds, and then play them to Queen Annalise?
she might stop menstruating.
So instead of getting blood drugs, you should just ask her huntress to do that.
I guess so.
Okay.
But yeah, so I don't know if that really is just like when you're in Odin Chapel, there are these whispers which are effectively impregnating radio waves emanating from the chapel.
I don't think it's impregnating. I think it's just like Odin feels around. And then, like we were saying, in the case of people who can bear children, he then gets into their blood and starts writhing around. Mm-hmm. The people who he can't impregnate just hear the whispering. But you need to have Ariana's blood, and you possibly need the red moon to be out. We don't have a way of testing that, obviously, but I think that's probably part that of it actually, for the barriers to be.
That actually brings us back to the question that I think we skipped, because I think we wanted to go over Mergo as the son of Odin first, but the question of Depees and Corns, and I think we skipped this, of how many babies did Odin have with humans?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
I'd say at least two, if we count Queen Yharnam as A, as human, right, and B, as having had a child with Uden. And yeah. I think we can extrapolate that to say at least four. Because we had the sacking of Kanehurst, which presumably took place under a blood moon. And we have the burning of Old Yharnam, which we know for certain took place under a blood moon.
Right, right.
So if we assume, and this is a big assumption, and is not entirely, this is not necessarily the case, but if we assume that the descent of a blood moon coincides with Uden successfully impregnating a woman, then we can have four examples that we know of.
Mm-hmm. I don't know about that fourth one, yeah, though. I mean, the third one would be the cut cord, right?
What?
Like, one kid from Ariana, one from Yharnam, one from, yeah, the description that was, yeah, cut.
That would be the sacking of Castle Kanehurst.
Yeah. But what's the fourth, that's the Kanehurst
one? Yeah.
Would be the burning of Old Yharnam, which there it is specifically stated that there was a blood moon that occurred.
Yeah. We don't have a cord from that. He's saying that, like, if there was a red moon, Erden could have impregnated someone.
Awesome. Thank you. Can we move on to the next question, or is there more to say about this?
Okay.
Yeah?
No, I think that's it. I thought we should have touched on that, because it occurred to me that we skipped that question.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. I think Big Asian Shook brought it up a while back, as well as some other people. And the question is the doll possessed by Uden, or is the doll actually Uden?
Can Redgrave address this one?
Is the doll Uden? No. Is the doll possibly possessed by Uden? Possibly.
How so?
Possibly in the sense that it's just as possible as any other explanation for the doll, because we don't really
have one. Yeah.
But is the doll Uden? No.
Okay. Thank you. And the following questions are about Uden blood and bullets. Princess Shirk asks, did we already address that?
We did.
I think we did.
Okay, that so was, let's like, just skip thing. This session then?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Well, the corrupt blood is like, do you want to bring up the Uden vermin thing?
No. Why? We have enough questions, Richie.
Alright. No, because that's about the corrupt blood.
I think it's worth at least,
yeah,
bringing
okay,
up.
Okay, but yeah, we need to phrase it so I can okay edit it. So how do we phrase it so it seamlessly enters the podcast, Richie?
Redgrave has a question. This is a question for Richard.
Hi.
Rich, is there a link between Uden and the vermin?
It's interesting that you ask.
Yeah.
If you look at the design of the rune that you get from Volta, it's similar in design to Formless Uden. Which makes it look a lot like those two runes were much more closely related to begin with. Like, it looks almost exactly like Formless Uden, but with dots instead of lines. And the reference to the writhing is, like we said, the word they use for writhe is the same word they use for the vermin writhing. So there looks to be some kind of connection, at least implied, between Uden and the vermin. And again, like, they talk about Uden needing very special blood to conceive. And you have Ariana, the whole deal with Ariana is she's got, like, the impure blood, the Kanehurst blood.
It sounds as if you're suggesting, yeah, that Uden's influence spreads far beyond the localized chapel.
Well, I think I've thought about this, okay? The way that you can square this particular circle with reference to what we were saying about, like, Tumor of Ihil and stuff, is you can say that in the past, Uden was very well spread out. But in the current present, all that Uden stuff is gone and just Uden Chapel's left.
So would it be safe to say that Uden's legacy, the lingering effects of Uden's legacy, are so far spread as to affect individuals everywhere in Yharnam?
I guess, yeah.
Thank you.
The prosecution rests.
We'll need to have Nick on a podcast at some point. He's a real lawyer.
I'm surprised he hasn't shown up at some point.
As a surprise?
You'll just be like, oh, everyone close your eyes. Well, I don't know how many surprises you like surprises.
I was specifically told that this was going to be okay because Rich likes surprises.
Rich loves surprises. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Richie, isn't this the best podcast ever?
Yeah.
I love the hesitation there.
There have been several other surprises that just involved, like, you telling me, like, making me do your mum's friend's homework for her.
Wow.
Like, that was less of a surprise.
Do we have the time for you to explain to me what exactly you're talking about in that context?
It's exactly what I said. She called me. She said, my mother's friend is doing some English vocab homework. Can you help? All right. And then she said, God. Oh, it'll be easier if we just talk like over voice. It'll be easier to do it. And then we did the whole thing and you recorded it and then you released it as an episode. So there is an episode that is just us doing your mum's friend's homework.
Is there a way I can get that sent to me?
Yeah, I will. It's part of the Saturday Night Snack Covenant, which was suggested
the worst thing we ever did.
No, it was suggested by one specific viewer, Bruhe, I think, and other people encouraged it, and we're like on episode 8 now, and I have solved the Mandela effect.
You have an audience of enablers. It worries me.
I'm sorry, did you say you've solved the Mandela effect?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm just going to leave that.
Thank you, everyone. Okay, so now we can move on to the next section. Is that okay?
Yeah,
sure.
Okay, and these are more interesting questions.
I can see that.
Art Witch Rorik asks, what's your favorite / least favorite theory about Odin?
Oh, boy.
We can't all say Odin is the doll is our least favorite.
I was
going to
say that. I think it's simultaneously my favorite and my least favorite, I think.
I think Odin is the doll is probably the universal least favorite for at least for the three of us, right?
Yeah, yeah.
But my favorite Odin theory, there's so many of them. Probably that, like, German is Odin or something ridiculous like that. I don't know.
Yeah.
There's just so many ridiculous Odin theories out there.
Well, here's a weird one. Whoever laid out the Bloodborne art book seems to be suggesting that the moon presence is Odin.
Yes.
Yeah.
Which is very odd.
You know what? I'm actually going to say that is my least favorite Odin.
Yeah.
That the moon presence is Odin.
Mm-hmm.
Because the doll, at the very least, is something incomprehensible and purposefully left unanswered. Whereas I think the moon presence really is not.
Well, we never hear the moon presence speak, right?
We do.
Do we?
In the sense that the word hunter in our brain is the voice of the moon presence.
Okay, but what she did is that she took a pebble and she shoved it in your skull.
Okay, yes, you are correct. My apologies. Yeah.
Oh.
Okay, so Sin.
Yes.
The moon presence, you see it and you can make physical contact with it and kill it. So it's probably not Odin, because Odin's formless.
Maybe the voice is separate.
Well, it's ventriloquism.
Yes. Exactly. The moon presence is like, bring me snacks. And the people in the chapel are like...
I like how your idea of, like, what would I do if I had the powers of an eldritch god?
If you had ultimate power of the eldritch gods,
I would get people to bring me food.
You know, you don't even need eldritch power to do that. You can order food online.
No, I just need my boyfriend. Because sometimes when I'm hungry, I just scream, boyfriend, make food!
Yeah. Because when you make it, you injure yourself.
You've already accomplished everything you set out to accomplish with your eldritch power.
Yes. Oh, he's very nice. He's so sweet. Love my boy.
Well, yeah, the last time you tried to make your own food, you severely injured yourself. So it's probably in everyone's best interests that he does this for you.
Well, and if you were successful, you might have been ill, too, like half-frozen chicken.
Oh, my God.
That's a good thing that you failed.
It turned out okay in the end. It was good.
Oh wow, okay.
Just, the process was, you know, complicated.
Mm-hmm.
Much like Bloodborne. It turned out okay in the end. But the process was very complicated.
Thank you, Rick.
You're welcome.
Okay, so does anybody else have any favorite, least favorite theories that we haven't mentioned?
Margot's wet nurse as Uden, yeah, because yeah. It doesn't have form, it just has like a cloak, but no physical, like, no.
Okay.
There are so many out there.
Yeah, no, it's like when the game came out, like, everything was Uden. It was just the go-to explanation for anything.
Because Uden, basically. Like the picture of that guy on Ancient Aliens on the History Channel.
Yeah, yeah. Aliens. Yeah. There was an article in some game website that was like someone writing about Dark Souls 3 and they assumed it was the same continuity as Bloodborne and were explaining how Uden was in Dark Souls 3.
I mean, it's FromSoft's own fault for doing that because they keep leaving Easter eggs from one game into the others.
Yeah.
Like when you like Boletaria is on the map in Dark Souls 1. Like you can see it as an Easter egg far to the west of Lordran. So
yeah, you can actually like it goes as far as there's leftover blood. Like there's Bloodborne assets in Dark Souls 3 as well. Like, yes, in, like, the gargoyles on the cathedral are the ones from the Chalice Dungeons, and, like, the unused Archdragon Peak map had the Kanehurst statues on it, and then they deleted it, and we were actually able to find, like, unused Bloodborne content in Dark Souls 3 that's not in Bloodborne.
Well, similarly,
yeah.
I believe all of Dark Souls, or is it all of Dark Souls 1 is also in Dark Souls 3 or something like that. I forget.
Oh, it's like the same engine. They just build on top of right, it. So yeah. like the undead entire merchant's dialogue is in Bloodborne. They just never removed it. It's just in there.
Right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But like Dark Souls 3 is, it's like built on top of Bloodborne, but it's built on top of like the very, very early versions of Bloodborne.
It's built on top of Bloodborne in kind of like a rushed sense, in the sense that they yeah. reused a significant amount of assets from Bloodborne to create yeah. Dark Souls.
To the point where when we data mined Dark Souls 3, we found unused Bloodborne stuff that you can't get by data mining Bloodborne. Because they overrode it when they finished Bloodborne, but it's still in like there's like alternate like NPC dialogues and there's like a model of Yharnam and everything just floating around in Dark Souls 3's data.
Yep.
Yeah.
Game development is messy.
Well, and I think it's important to note that pretty much all games have an equal amount of this cut nonsense. From Software is just particularly sloppy in leaving everything behind.
I don't know if it's that they're sloppy as much as it is that because of the nature of how it is that they construct the stories in their games, it incentivizes people much more to dig into cut content.
That's fair. That's another possibility. Like people are much more interested in finding the smoking gun in the Souls game.
Also from what I can tell with all the Souls, including Bloodborne, is that like the method they use to clean up the data is just an automated process. So they just feed they just run a program that goes through, it looks at everything, it says, is this ever in the RAM? If the answer is no, it gets rid of it. So that's why so much is left behind, because there's like the reason, for instance, so much cut Hemwick stuff is still around, is that there's just a ton of stuff loaded into Hemwick that you never see, but it's technically loaded in. So the game skips deleting that when it was automated.
Which is also why FromSoft games presumably often have performance issues that get addressed later
yeah,
on.
Yeah, and like,
to say the least, yes.
Yeah, and like the way that you can, if you're on that bridge where the Ebrietus lava are and you look down, you see a different version of the cathedral. Mm-hmm. It's because that version of the cathedral was just generated, like, they just ran that model through a program, made it lower poly.
Right.
And then they never updated it.
And if you and look back from Kanehurst, after you enter Kanehurst for the first time, you can see the original witch's abode.
Yeah, you can see all this stuff. And like I was talking about, like, I've seen the inside of Erden Chapel before it was Erden Chapel, because they just never got rid of it. Like, they never updated it.
Right.
It's because it's all just like they do it, it's all automated. So then once it's done, like, they just basically leave it. They don't update it again. That's why a lot of this stuff sort of lingers around. And there's all this stuff where, like the unused Yosefka's clinic, they didn't want to risk deleting it. Because, I mean, like, if you're working with a very complex program, it's better to not actually delete anything, because it can cause everything to collapse like a house of cards. Mm-hmm. So, like, the unused, like, massive Yosefka's clinic, it's still in the game, and they just put it in the sky above Yosefka's clinic and made it invisible.
That's amazing.
So, like, Lance was able to... He said, oh, yeah, there's, like, an invisible version of the clinic that's just in the sky.
Gee, I wonder why maybe there were some loading time issues on Bloodborne's release.
Yeah. And he was able to, like, look at the wireframe and be like, yep, there's all the missing floors and there's the staircase. And...
Aw, thank you, Richie. Okay. So, Che Pablo asks, is Erden carbon-based or silicon-based?
I think we're going to have to say carbon-based because of the blood.
Oh.
And also, silicon-based life, as far as our understanding of physics goes, is impossible. So, I guess carbon.
What about you, Aegon?
I don't think he's either, because he's formless. To be carbon-based or silicon-based would be to have form, I would imagine.
Oh, look at that.
He's metaphysical as opposed to physical. I know I was probably not supposed to take that question literally, but...
That's a good point. We were all wrong. Okay, thank you. Art Divinator Arky asks, is Erden a poor man's...
Yogg-Sothoth.
What is that?
That is an Lovecraft. Influential creature in Lovecraft's mythology.
Oh.
No, Yogg-Sothoth is not particularly... Uden is much more analogous to Azathoth.
Azathoth, than he is
to, if you had to pick a figure in the Lovecraft mythos that Uden would be analogous to, it would be Azathoth, the blind idiot god.
Yeah,
Yogg-Sothoth is much more of a grounded figure.
Mm.
Pretty frightening looking, though.
Oh, are they referring to Yogg-Sothoth being invisible in Dunwich Horror? Is that what because Odin's invisible?
Yes, but Odin isn't invisible.
No, but like you can't see as in I mean that they can't be seen, and Yogg-Sothoth can't be seen but can be felt.
I guess.
Oh, and also Yogg-Sothoth has a creepy monster baby.
He does, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But to be honest, most things in Lovecraft have a creepy monster baby.
Okay. Thank you. Che Pablo asks, if Odin is related to Mercury, is he also related to Freddie Mercury? Well, yeah, it's Freddie Mercury, you know, amazing voice.
That's true. That's very true.
Yeah, that's a good point. And technically, Freddie Mercury only exists in voice now.
Aww.
Too soon?
I would counter that Freddie Mercury is not his real name.
That's true.
His name is Farouk Bulsara, and I might be pronouncing that incorrectly, and I apologize if I am doing so. But
so does it mean Odin is not his real name either?
Well, Odin is the name we ascribe him.
They also so probably not. They call him Erden, and they don't know what it means. So he's been going by Erden for long enough for people to forget that that's the name.
Correct.
Indeed.
Yeah.
Which, I guess, depending on how you define language, would in fact make it his real name. And I guess similarly with Freddie Mercury.
That's true.
Awesome. Thank you. Killing It asks, is Erden actually Velka?
Yes. Next question.
Yes. Yep.
I wish. That would be a much more satisfying conclusion than we got in the Ringed City.
Richie, do the outro.
That was a discussion. Yep.
Oh my god, I almost forgot something. Remember how you're my best friend?
Oh god. Go on.
Aegon.
Yo.
Oh, I'm really scared of hope Rich is okay with this. Okay.
Oh, I like how you're like, I'm really nervous because I'm about to get Richie to do something for me.
But
how does this impact on me?
Aegon.
Yo.
Have you ever talked to a great one?
Oh, God.
I think I'm talking to one right now, aren't I?
Maybe.
You're always whispering in Richie's ear.
Okay, all jokes aside. There's actually a legit great one that we can make contact with.
Oh, is this a Bruitus?
You summoned them by saying their name.
Oh, is that how it works?
Hello.
The Bruitus, hi!
Doing very well, thank you.
Oh my god, nice to see you! Do you know Aegon? Aegon and Redgrave are here.
Yes, I'm familiar with Aegon's work, yeah.
I believe we met a Bruitus. I believe we met the first time.
Yes,
this
I
is my
yeah,
first time
yeah.
meeting a Bruitus, but hi.
Hello. Hi, I'm the great one. People will thumb and accidentally if they say a Bruitus instead of a Bruitus.
Hi, friend.
I didn't know that was how it worked, actually.
Oh, well, Finn summoned me accidentally a couple of months ago and has insisted on summoning me repeatedly every episode.
I've seen the pictures of you, Abrutus, on the mug with the different outfits on.
Richard's not very happy.
Wait.
Is Richard not pleased with those mugs?
Richard wasn't consulted?
He wasn't. That seems like a choice that... Probably, you should have consulted.
Richard has, like, he remembers things selectively, okay? So, Aegon, I just sent you what a Bruitus looks like.
Oh my god, that's amazing.
Yeah, Bruitus is the cutest, and everybody loves him, and he's our favorite. He's our favorite great one.
Richard's not that fond of him.
Is there anything you'd like to ask a Bruitus, Aegon? He knows all. He's a great one.
Is Ibritas or Ibritus, is she your cousin or something?
Oh, she's my half sister.
So
do you share a mother or a father with Ibritus?
I'm not at liberty to reveal.
Oh, okay. I apologize. I did not mean to find
him. So if you're actually a great one, does that mean that you're half because she's your half sister, is she also a great one?
Well, she's adopted.
She's your... Wait, she's not your half-sister, then.
She's my adopted stepsister.
She's your adopted... So,
oh, my gosh.
Your adopted stepsister.
Well, you know, great ones are convoluted. Our minds don't understand.
No, I think our minds are capable of understanding this. So if she is your adopted stepsister, that would mean that one of your parents remarried after a difficult divorce and married it into the parent of Abrietus, who was adopted by that parent, but also happens to be nearly identical to you.
I'll level with you. The more mugs I see, the more family members just seem to keep being invented. I'm not entirely sure how my family tree works anymore. I was just a thing, and then one day I saw a mug. There was Buff Bruitus, Bell Bruitus,
I like Sir Bruitus. I've seen Sir Bruitus was my favorite.
Oh, Aegon, have you seen Sir Brutus?
Have I what? Sorry? A Brutus?
Have you seen Sir Brutus?
No.
Okay, I'll show you Sir Brutus.
Oh my gosh. Sir Brutus. Oh my gosh.
There's also Belle Brutus. The cutest one.
How did I miss all this?
I wish I'd missed it.
Recently, we have revealed Hunter Brutus. Redgrave, I don't know. Yeah, I sent it to you.
Then you seem to be saying we a lot. Don't recall Richard having a say in any of this.
I like Hunter Brutus quite a lot.
Yeah, yeah. It's by Ike. Ike is amazing. Yeah. I'll link his social media in the description.
Wow.
Okay, well, Brutus, thank you so much for coming by. We're always happy to...
That's quite all right.
Yeah.
It's all right. I'll need a baby.
I love how Brutus strangely has an American accent.
I'll be sending an Uber to pick up the baby later on.
Okay, thank you, Brutus.
Okay, bye.
Bye, Brutus.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, okay, I'm back. Did I miss anything?
Oh, hi, Rich. You just missed a Brutus.
Hi.
Here.
Damn.
Okay. Brutus is the American Great One. It's a good thing you're in Australia, because otherwise, yeah, you might run into them from time to time.
Yeah.
It's a shame. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Good to continue to live in this nightmare where random things I say end up on mugs.
What's going to be more dangerous, Brutus or drop bears, Rich?
Brutus doesn't seem capable of harming anyone.
That's right, whereas drop bears are very dangerous, my understanding.
They're very dangerous, yes. Well, that was a discussion of Erden with two very special guests, Andy Brutus.
Three very special.
I don't even think what is happening. They must still be sleeping.
Wake up. Almost time for the podcast to start. You're still in bed.
Yeah.
Yeah, seriously. Oh my gosh.
Thank you very much, Aegon and Redgrave, for this 2015 reunion.
Yeah, thank you very much for having us on, and Sinclair for organizing all this. This has been a blast.
Thank you as well.
Oh, well, thank you for coming. I mean, I assume people know where to find y'all.
Yeah, if you just Google Redgrave Bloodborne, you'll probably find everything I do. I'm still active on Twitter. I have no current future plans for content, but I will never say never. But I have no current plans for Bloodborne related content.
But you're going to be on Let's Talk Lore later for Dark Souls 3, right? Whenever I get
sure.
back to Twitter.
Whenever you'd like to have me, I'll be happy to do so.
Awesome. To finish my thesis first, almost done editing, but yeah, awesome.
All right,
yeah.
What about you, Aegon? Where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at Aegon_of_Astora or at youtube.com/Aegon_of_Astora. And that's about it.
Okay. Well, thanks very much for coming. We really appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you for having us.
Say thank you, Richie.
Thank you, Sin. Mostly thank you, Aegon and Redgrave. Bye.
Bye.
Bye. So now I'm going to press stop, but nobody leaves.
Yeah, we have to wait for the thing to process.